George Clooney and Brad Pitt anchored Steven Soderbergh's remake of Ocean's 11. Now, what may be an even more impressive collection of actresses brings you Ocean's 8.
The film stars Sandra Bullock, Cate Blanchett, Anne Hathaway, Rihanna, Awkwafina, Mindy Kaling, Helena Bonham Carter, and Sarah Paulson. And this time, they're robbing the Met Gala.
Hathaway plays a starlet whose borrowed jewels they want to rip off, but it's not going to be easy. I'm Linda Holmes.
And I'm Stephen Thompson. We're talking about Ocean's 8 on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour.
Here with us in the studio is Glenn Weldon of NPR's Arts Desk, back from Ireland. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And in our fourth chair, you know, we are always excited when we bring in a new fourth chair, but I admit I'm a little extra excited.
Me too.
I'm a little extra excited. We are finally bringing to the show the great and good Bim Adewunmi. Bim is a senior culture writer at BuzzFeed News and the co-host of the podcast Thirst Aid Kit. Hi, Bim.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so glad that you have come to talk about Ocean's 8 with us.
I feel like this is what I was born for.
Me too. I feel like I'm just going to let you host the show because I just want to listen to Bim talk. All right. And I'm going to talk to you in a second. First, I want to ask Glenn, how did this strike you, this film?
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm historically wary, dare I say, cherry of of what I call the cold mountain effect in films, which is when you people your movie with not necessarily actors, but movie stars. Because right. movies, and the difference is movie stars come encased in a cloud of preconceived notions that kind of get in the way of the story often. You know, in the film Cold Mountain, I think that happens. Here, and historically in the Ocean's films, That dynamic is different because they trade on you coming to these films and these actors with a certain amount of preconceived notions. And in the case of all these actresses, but specifically in the case of Anne Hathaway, they're using it, they're drafting on that, I think, in an interesting way we can talk a little bit more about. You know, this is by Gary Ross, who is a writer-director of Hunger Games, Seabiscuit, Pleasantville, also the writer of Big. Dude is the patron saint of Saturday afternoon on TBS.
True. So
that's kind of his niche. You have to ask yourself, what is this aiming at as a film? It's aiming at playful, light, frothy. I think it hits it.
All right, Bim. It is time for you to tell me what you thought of Ocean's 8.
I mean, yeah, it's frothy. Yeah, it's light. My quibble is that it's perhaps a little bit too frothy and a little bit too light. Mm-hmm. I found myself, and this is no shade to the actors involved, but I occasionally let my eyes kind of drift away from the screen.
That doesn't seem like a good sign.
Yeah, like it wasn't down to them. I think the stakes weren't set to be as high as they could be. So it felt to me like it's nice that they're doing this. But also, you know, there's no compelling reason. I don't know. I feel like, I felt like I was being a very specific kind of quibbler. So I left and I was just kind of like, I guess. And I was like, wait. That's not how I felt on the inside. I'll tell you what. And this is something I said immediately after I left. It lacked the punchy and very specific style of Soderbergh.
Absolutely.
So it felt to me that on that score, it fell so flat that perhaps I was marking it a little bit harsher because it was missing that fundamental pizzazz. And I know I sound like somebody's grandmother, you know, panache, pizzazz. But it does lack that. But everybody else was bringing, you know, Sandra Bullock was being Sandra Bullock and, you know, Rihanna's Rihanna. I mean, at one point, this is my favorite memory of the movie, she arrived in the frame and literally, the audience just started clapping.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
That happened in our screening, too.
Right. You see, like, imagine having that much power that people just want to, like, applaud you for, like, existing. Like, yeah. So there was that. I thought the chemistry between most of the characters, everything was going smooth and great. Mindy felt like the most Mindy, you know? Like, I felt like this is the most substantial role she's had in a while. I was very happy to see her have this. But even that felt too small. I loved Helena Bonham Carter. I thought, ooh, Irish accent. Yeah. Lovely. Like, there were all these things that kind of added up. But the sum total of it somehow felt a little bit damp.
Interesting. Mm. All right, Stephen, what do you think?
I don't know if I can compete with damp.
The Stephen Thompson story.
No, Bim, it's true.
Okay.
To me, you don't so much watch this movie as feel it waft into the room on a breeze. This is, I mean, you said it yourself, Glenn, it is TBS at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You're flipping channels, you hit it, you don't flip past it. It is, I found, nicely economical in its storytelling. It's actually trying to do quite a bit while at the same time not show you the effort in doing how much it's trying to do. It has to. She is Sandra Bullock is assembling a super team, largely of people she doesn't know for reasons they explain. Then they have to prepare for the big heist. The big heist has to happen, and then you have the aftermath of the big heist. That's a lot to try to pack into a movie.
Yeah.
They do that a little bit, I think, at the expense of some character development, but at the same time, I think that's necessary for what this movie is trying to do, which is be as breezy as possible, as light as possible, as fun as possible. I think the music in this movie is very telling. This does not have a lot of like your kind of typical movie scoring, you know, with the strings and the rum. There's a lot of kind of like a little jazzy lilt.
Right. And that is kind of similar to the Soderbergh.
Right.
That's kind of
right.
Going for the Soderbergh kind of feel, as is some of the creative use of like dividing the screen into boxes and all that.
Right. Yeah. I'm not, and I don't mean to suggest that this movie is in a vacuum separate from these other Oceans movies.
Because
it also refers back to the Oceans movies.
A couple times, yeah.
But I'm taking it as a unit of entertainment.
Sure, of course.
That you were considering for.
Just the way all art wants to be perceived.
At least I didn't use the word product.
No.
The fact that it's able to kind of bound along, I'm with this. I'm kind of galloping along with this movie that just kind of moves very kind of quickly and breezily through its paces.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that you're talking about when you and Glenn are talking about TBS on a Sunday afternoon is what my friend Sarah Bunting would call a poppy fields movie. You know, like in The Wizard of Oz when they're going through the poppy fields and they just gradually sort of doze off. It's the idea that when you come across a movie on television, you just have to keep watching it.
Yeah.
And Sandra Bullock is kind of a queen of the poppy fields movie between
She's
While
great.
You Were Sleeping and
several classic.
It's a classic poppy fields.
But so is even like Speed.
Absolutely. Okay. So this, I think, is a poppy fields movie, or will be, but so was Ocean's 11 in a way.
Right.
I absolutely agree with Bim that it lacks the... It is not nearly as stylish as Ocean's 11 was. But what I do think it has that to me elevated it a bit was I don't think it's a coincidence that they took this film, which is a what I would call an Except with Women movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's Ocean's 11, Except with Women. I don't think it's a coincidence that they set it at the Met Gala, which is this incredible performance of female celebrity, primarily. You know, I think without spoiling it, you can say there's a moment late in the film where I felt like what they were saying was when you see a woman at the Met Gala, you have no idea what kind of woman she actually is. When you see Awkwafina or Rihanna or any of these people at the Met Gala, you actually have no idea what's behind that because they are all so different. There's also a moment late in the film where there's a series of actress cameos that made me think, this movie is sort of about actresses. It's kind of about Hollywood and the way that they... I mean, it's not overtly about that in the story, but I feel like the making of it is very tied up in all these women playing with kind of what their image is. This opportunity for Rihanna to do something that to me is a much more interesting use of Rihanna than when she was in what,
Valerian.
Or
Battleship.
Well,
or Battleship.
Exactly. I think this is like, she's cool in this. And Awkwafina is cool in this and is going to be in Crazy Rich Asians. And I think, as I was saying last night, is going to have a studio comedy in about 2 or 3 years because she's so funny and good. Mm. Can I just say, this version of Cate Blanchett is like the sexiest thing in the entire world to me. Like
100%.
This like platinum blonde with bangs, the kind of straight hair. She's got such incredibly pale skin. And then she's got these like slim menswear suits, but incredibly just tailored like crazy.
Yeah.
Am I right, Bim?
You are 100% right. Because every time I saw Cate Blanchett, I would perk up in my chair. There's a tweet that I come back to every few months because I remember it and I burst out laughing whatever I'm doing, and someone said Cate Blanchett in every movie looks as though she's whispering under her breath, my diamonds. And I think this is a perfect way of you to think about her, because I do think she often looks like a very kind of wealthy, tired woman who's just kind of like going through just like, oh god, my horrors, you know. And And then in this, she's kind of, like you say, she's kind of like a lounge lizard. She's very kind of like louche, and she's just kind of like, she not only wears these menswear trousers, she often has like a deep V in her shirt.
Mm-hmm.
She's moving her hips really lazily. She's kind of like, she kind of stalks across the screen. Like, she's just kind of like, ugh, I guess. And that's the other thing as well. The chemistry between her and Sandra Bullock, to me, felt kind of weirdly baity, because I was like, they're clearly doing it. These people are doing it.
I thought that too. And I was trying to figure out, like, people have talked so much about not saying, oh, this is clearly like a queer character, uh-huh. even though they're not saying so in the movie, because that's not very satisfying.
Right.
But at the same time, it is interesting to me, like, how often you see this many women in a movie where they're really not concerned with who, if anyone, they're romantically or sexually interested
right.
in.
Which is why it felt to me then like a cheat. I don't know if this is saying too much, but like, there were certain elements of it where I thought, oh, well, that feels cheap, bearing in mind the obvious chemistry on show here. And like, lots of the wording like was alluding to something.
Right.
You know, and you could read something into that if you wanted to, but also even if you didn't, it was like, oh, like I said, these people are doing it. And that was like, you know, even like the after heist fantasy.
Right.
I was just kind of like, Jesus, like, you know what? Like, this is just so, it's plain as a nose on my face. I was intrigued by it, but I also wished, a part of me wished that they had leaned in so much
yes.
more than just kind of nudge, nudge, wink, wink. I thought also, when you were talking about the female celebrity, the actor-y element of it, I actually think Anne Hathaway stole the film so
yes.
comprehensively
yes.
as this actor who is like, you know, fake ditzy and incredibly calculating and very smart, but also kind of like a monster. Mm-hmm. I'm so relieved to see Anne Hathaway do that kind of role, because I think for a long time she kind of had this horrible, you know, and it wasn't anything that she did. It's just that people are horrible. And that whole thing about Anne Hathaway tries so hard. And it's like, well, you're supposed to. You're supposed mm-hmm. to take your work seriously. You're supposed mm-hmm. to. And I thought Anne kind of was maligned very unfairly because she was like this very earnest theater kid, which, you know, I relate.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I just thought, God, just let her go loose. And she does this very well. You know, when she was in Brokeback, when she, I think she played Luann in Brokeback, and she's like this over the top, very kind of, you know, platinum blonde, like Texas. And I thought, good, more of this, like less of the kind of like ingenue with big eyes looking down. I want uh-huh. her to be like this, you know, this beast. And she really kind of inhabits that in
yeah.
this role.
Yeah. Oh, Bim is speaking my language here. You guys know how much I love a good chat about how we devour actresses in this incredibly unfair way.
I cannot wait for this film to kind of permeate, get saturate, get into the culture, so that the small but very vocal cohort of people who hate Anne Hathaway will have to deal with this performance,
mm-hmm.
which exacerbates everything they think they hate about her and dissects it in a
mm-hmm.
way that is really interesting. And is, I agree with you, Bim, it's the, her best performance in years. And a surface reading would be she's not doing anything. She's doing so much. And what she's doing is she's having a ball. And
yeah.
part
yes.
of the appeal of this movie and all the Ocean's movies and a lot of movies like this with as much of movie stars is you want to see them leaning away. You don't want to see them leaning in and trying so hard and rending their garments and
yeah.
acting.
Yeah.
You want to see them chilling. Everybody on this screen is chilling. Now,
yes.
it is important to note that the organizing principle of this movie, the reason it's being done with women and not with men, early on, Sandra Bullock, who is planning the heist, says women are invisible.
Oh,
people
yeah.
don't notice them. Men get noticed. That's why we're not going to have any men in this group. Now, that would make sense if it wasn't the Met Ball, where dudes in tuxes are a dime a dozen
yep.
that nobody notices. And if you didn't include, in a sea of facial symmetry, you did not include Rihanna, as we've
yeah,
discussed.
Right.
I mean, she is just, you can't ignore her.
It's astonishing, isn't it?
But this is an alternate universe where people,
where she can just slip by.
Well, and people just slip by. You know, slap a hoodie on her and she's no, right,
this
sure.
is, this is what I was saying last night. Like, assume an inconspicuous Rihanna.
Right.
And then
right.
you can have the film.
And then extrapolate.
But I completely agree with you. I think Anne Hathaway in this, I have been such a fan of her for such a long time. And I thought what happened to her, you know, first she had people who hated her, and then she had whole think pieces about people who hated her,
mm-hmm.
which just made it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned into like, well, I don't like it because what was the thing? She said my dream came true or something. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
She wanted honesty.
It's earnestness. Like, imagine, the thing that shocked me was I thought Americans liked earnestness. Like, I'm British. So everything, I'm very cold. And I always think about when people kind of like are gushing and I'm like, just shut up. Just stop. I just thought, you know, like exactly like you said, she basically just threw herself into this. She's just kind of like, oh, you want me to be a vamp? Watch this. She's cheeky and she's funny and she runs away with the film. And I love Sandy. Like, I stand for Sandra Bullock. Like, I ride hard for Sandra Bullock.
Me too.
But I was kind of like, oh, I need more of Daphne. Like, give me more of this ridiculous starlet woman. You know, the way she winks at the camera and she kind of rolls her shoulder like, I know. And it made me so happy to see her because, yeah, it is her best performance in ages. And I think it was because she was allowed to just kind of like go big. And every time I imagine her kind of saying, is this too much? And the director going, no more.
Yes, I
agree. She nails it.
I think what makes this film appealing to me is it does look like everyone is having a great time. And I think all of them, you see some playing with what their image is. Yeah. I think Helena Bonham Carter is sort of doing a blown out version of Helena Bonham Carter, except Irish. And there was a wonderful interview with her where they were basically like, why is the character Irish? She's like, I don't know. Like, I just thought it would be fun.
At least you could do the accent. The worst thing is when someone attempts to do something interesting and you're God, I wish you hadn't.
And, you know, frankly, it thrills me that there are practically no men of any significance in it. That other than there's one who's mostly a motivator, the same way that Julia Roberts was a motivator in Ocean's 11.
Because the film is so focused on these stories in particular, I found him to be extra extraneous. Like,
yes, it wasn't
like he wasn't just like a little bit useless. He was like all the way useless. And I understand it because, listen, I love Richard Armitage and I will watch him in anything. I've loved him since a TV series in the UK called Spooks, which I think was called MI5 here. I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of his. I always want to watch him. And in this, I just kept thinking, God, just get off. There's nothing. You're adding nothing to me. In fact, you're actively taking away from me. Just go away.
Yeah.
Like,
I wanted a better cad in a way.
Yes.
If he's going to be a cad, I want a better cad.
A rake from like a Regency novel, like someone truly awful.
I agree with that. But gosh, they're having fun. And boy, does Kate Blanchett look good in those suits.
Just honestly, I was going to like make up a vision board of just her in like a series of suits. And I didn't even know what my end goal would be, just to have them somewhere in my house. You know how you know the photos that come in photo frames?
Yeah.
And it's always like, you know, a black and white dude playing tennis. And I feel like I could just fill up picture frames in my house with Kate Blanchett in like different suits. And I'm like, just no reason. I'm like, oh, do you know her? No, I just like the suit.
Yeah, it's just a bolero jacket. Why not?
That's what I mean when I say I do think that there's some playing around here with the performance of beauty and style and aesthetics that is a little bit more maybe conscious than some people are going to think it is. This is the first time I think I've seen Mindy Kaling kind of without the flibbertigibbet kind of stuff, without the kind of whimsy as an accessory, which I think she's great at, but I don't think she necessarily needs. I love Rihanna in it.
Yeah. Maybe what we're reacting to is the absence of the quote-unquote male gaze, and it's and there's lots of male gaze. Lots of male gaze around the periphery. Yeah.
I don't know.
It felt to me that the stated goals of what they would do with their money was, it felt very female, but like almost performatively female. Like, this is what ladies do when they steal. And this is what men do when they steal.
So
it was trying to kind of place them in a kind of, these aren't your regular crooks, they're sensible crooks. That rubbed me a little bit the wrong way. Maybe I'm being sensitive, but I was just kind of like, sometimes women just steal for the heck of it.
Yeah.
You know, I like that. It doesn't have to be framed as a, you know, a very specific kind of female theft.
Yeah. So let us know what you think of Ocean's 8. Come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week. So come right back.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Wix.com. A web platform for creating your own professional website. With Wix, whether it's your first time creating a website or you're a longtime pro, you can do it yourself. Choose from hundreds of stunning templates or start from scratch with drag-and-drop technology and powerful web features. Join over 125 million people already using Wix to create their own websites. Go to Wix.com to create yours today. So what will you create? Support for this podcast and the following message come from Microsoft Surface Laptop. At just under 3 pounds and with up to 14 and a half hours of battery life, Surface Laptop lets you binge watch your favorite shows whenever and wherever you want. Do more with Surface Laptop. Thin, light, and beautiful.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
I think I've addressed on this show several times that I have watched every episode of The Good Place over and over and over and over
again. Oh, yes.
Again.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Over again. Now there is a Good Place podcast.
Yes, there is.
Hosted by the great and good Mark Evan Jackson, who I talked about on the People We're Pulling For episode a little while back, an actor I absolutely love. He plays Sean on The Good Place. He hosts The Good Place podcast. And in the first full-length episode of the show, there is a 52-minute interview with Mike Schur, who created The Good Place, also obviously Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Parks and Rec, just basically the person behind like 80% of my favorite television. I could have just swum around in that interview forever. There's going to be a whole bunch more of them. There's going to be an episode-by-episode breakdown. This thing just premiered. It is like the official NBC podcast of The Good Place.
Yep.
It will tide me over until July 17th when The Good Place Season 2 DVD comes out and they have all the like extended deleted scenes and stuff like that. I love, love, love this podcast and can't wait to hear more of it.
Yes, I have heard that one too. I endorse. Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
Planet Funny, How Comedy Took Over Our Culture, is a new book, just came out, by affable Jeopardy champ / comedy-adjacent Twitter personality Ken Jennings. And it is a very affable examination of how the role of comedy has expanded, accelerated by social media, but it is a long history of comedy with a lot of concentration on what's happening in the last 5-10 years. This is a critique, but it's an very informed one, as you might imagine. He's worried about how the comedic take, the comedic reaction, has become reflexive and unthinking and omnipresent. So there's some hand-wringing here, but it's not that of a scold. It's a dude sincerely questioning and questioning his own assumptions. And that's important because it's written by a straight, white, Mormon, middle-aged dude. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about comedy and how comedy is changing, interrogating your own preconceived notions is important, and he does that again and again. He also does what you want a book like this to do, which is articulate a societal shift or a cultural development that seems obvious on reflection, completely obvious, but you haven't seen it written down, articulated in quite that way. It's very comprehensive. It's very logical. It's a lot of fun to read. It's one of these books that you're glad has been written, but you also resent the fact that you didn't write it. So that is Planet Funny, How Comedy Took Over Our Culture by Ken Jennings.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Bim, what is making you happy this week?
Oh, so many things. The first thing is Pilates, which I feel like an evangelist. I want to spread the good word about Pilates. So that's been like the number one thing, and I will talk about it at length if you don't stop me, so please stop me. The other thing that I am absolutely excited about, genuinely, and I haven't felt this way about a movie in quite some time, is I saw the trailer for Widows. Which is the new Steve McQueen movie coming out this November, and it stars a bunch of women, again speaking about, you know, majority female cast. It stars Viola Davis and Cynthia Erivo and Elizabeth Debicki and Michelle Rodriguez. This trailer looks genuinely terrifying, genuinely kind of menacing. There is a bit in the trailer where Daniel Kaluuya and Brian Tyree Henry, who's great, by the way, in everything, but especially in Lobby Hero and Atlanta. But anyway, they're standing opposite, I think it's like a funeral for one of these women's husbands, and Daniel Kaluuya executes this incredibly sexy and yet utterly terrifying little wave, which is something that I kind of coined a term for this feeling. I called it terousal. Where you are terrified but also deeply aroused, and he did that, and I was like, oh god, what the hell is this movie and how can I watch it ASAP? So yeah, I'm very, very excited, and it's based on a book by a very, very famous British crime writer called Linda LaPlante, and I'm excited because Linda writes wonderful books, and to see that it's getting like this highbrow Steve McQueen treatment I think is making me very, very happy.
Oh, nice. Thank you very much, Bem. So what is making me happy this week is a graphic novel, a romantic comedic graphic novel called My Boyfriend is a Bear. It was written by my friend Pam Ribbon, who goes back to Television Without Pity with me, and also is writing the new Wreck-It Ralph movie.
Ooh.
It is illustrated by Kat Ferris, and the book is about, it's the story of a woman whose boyfriend is a bear. Not a completely anthropomorphized bear where, like, he talks in full sentences. Like, all he ever says is gra.
So it's not Paddington.
No. All he ever says is gra. But he can, like, put up a shelf in her apartment. So it's sort of in between where he's just bear-like. he's a real live animal bear. And so the art is so inventive. The comedy is so inventive. I don't know how to explain how weird but sweet. It's funny and absurd, but it's also really heartfelt in this way. Because, of course, it's very sad because he has to go hibernate. Anyway, the book is called My Boyfriend is a Bear. The art is really fun. The writing is really fun. You have to just take my word for it. It is called My Boyfriend is a Bear by Pam Ribbon and Kat Ferris. And that is what is making me happy this week. That brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Steven at I Dislike Steven. You can find Glenn at G.H. Weldon. And you can find Bim at B-I-M-A-D-E-W. You can find our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy. And our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the in-and-out music you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks so much to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. If you have a second and you're so inclined, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more folks to find the show. We will see you all right back here next week.
Hey, thanks for listening. And I want to make sure you know about Up First. You can start your day with it tomorrow. Up First is the morning news podcast from NPR. When news moves fast, Up First is the quick morning update on what happened and what you need to start the day. Wake up with Up First tomorrow morning on the NPR One app and also wherever you listen to podcasts.